terms of what we want to finish on Mechiras Chametz, so I mentioned yesterday that Mechiras Chametz is too vast of a topic. We could talk about it forever. So I said I just want to say one, maybe we'll say two, halachic points, which will then lead to a vort that I want to say about Mechiras Chametz. But before we do that, are there any questions that you want to ask about Mechiras Chametz that we didn't get to? Just in case, any practical issues? Any considerations? Zebediah? Yeah, or conceptual questions.
Start selling
you want to sell of your rooms. Yeah, so Pash, that's also yours. So you sell that too?
You should sell that.
Yeah. I mean, if it's yours, if it's your friend's, it's in the room, you should definitely you get rid of it or sell it.
Akiva. What about online sales?
Yeah, so theoretically that works. If you have no option, then that works. We're not thrilled about it, because I mentioned yesterday the whole thing that when you go to the rabbi and you take the handkerchief from the pen, so that's not a sale, you're not selling it to the rabbi. There was a whole discussion in general how that all developed, but let's assume that you're not actually selling the chametz to the rabbi, but rather you're appointing the shliach. So if you're appointing the shliach, then that doesn't require so much. And the Rambam writes that we want to have some type of formal process in order to make sure people take it seriously, but it's not actually necessary. So therefore, yes, you could do it online. But being that as it is, we're trying to get people to take it seriously and to recognize a little more what's going on. So on the one hand, we're happy the online options exist because many more people are able to connect to that than otherwise, but still, when possible, it's better to actually interact.
What about the issue of access? Like we said yesterday, that there has to, you know, yeah, there has to be split, or at least you want there to be access.
Right, so you still would have to do that.
If Chabad is selling to one person in New York, and you're selling your, like, Arizona chametz.
How practical is it? I mean, whoever they're selling with, I mean, near to them. So yeah, it's not so practical, but at least it's possible. As long as you, it's an interesting question to ask because it gives us an opportunity to kind of sharpen a point. So I asked you yesterday, or we discussed a little bit yesterday, or the day before, this idea of providing access. So what's pshat? Is that just a nice thing that we do because it helps make the idea more serious? And anything that makes it more serious, we want to throw in? Or is it maybe really Mekar HaDin? Maybe that's what, when they say Bavad Shul Yarin, things like that, maybe it's talking about issues like that, that if the guy really has no access, then it's not a sale, it's nothing. So, nafkamina for what you're saying here, that if Lamaisa, you make access possible, and he happens to be far away, okay, so then that's not your problem. Because if he wants to come, he can get it. So as long as it's accessible, if he chooses, and he... also not going to help if you're going to say, my chametz is in New York, and you're in China for Pesach, he's got to come to China to get the keys, so that's a joke. If he's in China, but if he should decide he wants the chametz in Minnesota, so then he'll be there. So then it should work. Now, the mice, in terms of the seriousness... So the fact that he actually is, let's say, thousands of miles away, so it doesn't help as much. But then we already said that the online is not perfect as far as giving you a full sense of seriousness. We'd rather have you a little bit more involved directly as far as feeling a full seriousness of what's happening. But as far as things that are absolutely crucial to it happening, presumably it does work. I had a mice once where, this is also just something to fill in, that normally, so we sell the chametz the morning of Erev Pesach, the morning of the 14th. There are some who are machmir to sell the night before for a number of reasons, different chumras that are connected to that. But one reason, which is really mikar hadin, is that if you have, let's say, you're a rabbi and you have congregants who are traveling to Eretz Yisrael, so then you have to sell earlier because they're going to be ahead of you. Right? And their Zman Isur Chametz is going to kick in long before you sell. And you can't sell after the Zman Isser Chametz. Now there is room to clear about, does it go based on where the owner is or where the Chametz is? Moshe Shtarbuch has chuvas about that. There is what to discuss about that question. So it's not 100% slam dunk that it's possible for somebody who goes to Eretz Yisrael for Pesach and uses Chametz at home in Pennsylvania. It's not 100% out of the question that it can be sold at that time, but it's certainly a problem. Right? Question about that? Let's finish this point first. Right, so that's an issue, right? So if somebody, let's say you're a rabbi and you have Balabatim who are going to Eretz Yisrael for Pesach, so on our forms, we ask them to tell us that because we need to know that. We need to know if anybody's going to be in a different time zone in that direction so that you can address their Mechiras Chametz before. So when that happens, so just practically, so I look at my forms, and if I have people who are in Israel, I separate out those forms. It's a place where they're supposed to indicate that they're going to be somewhere else. And separate out those forms, and I turn those forms over to be sold the night before. Right? So it happened once that nobody told me that they were going, or I guess it didn't have a critical mass of people who were going. And late the night before, I was, you know, hours after, would normally have taken care of the earlier sale. I discovered among the forms a form of someone who, I forget exactly how it came clear, who was in Israel and hadn't indicated. They realized that they have their chametz still to be sold and they're already in Israel. So it was very close, time difference wise, it was very close to the Zman Isser Chametz in Israel. There was only a few minutes left. And I tried getting a hold of them, and I tried contacting people in Israel, seeing could you find anyone who hasn't sold their chametz yet. And the vice that we ended up finding an online option in Israel in order to address that. So, bottom line, it's certainly better than nothing, and it can be helpful in cases like this. And Mikra Din, it certainly seems to work. But when possible, for various reasons, just of mindset, we recommend that it's done face to face. I think Judah was up first.
I was wondering, do you have to sell a kidney out or Pesach? Or
no.
You don't have to.
Yeah, okay. I don't have the answer by your rabbi, you must say, by that. Now, that's, we could say more about that, time permitting, but why not? Jonah?
I was going to ask if there's a possibility that you could have taken control of their comments as yours, and then...
Well, that would be harder, too, because theoretically, you could work that out. But let's say, if you want to explore the complexity of these issues, right? So we said there's two ways to understand the rabbi's role. One way is that the Balabatim sell their chametz to the rabbi, and he sells it then to the non-Jewish purchaser. But, he said that's tricky, because among the issues is that the sale from Jew to non-Jew is more complicated halachically than from Jew to Jew. So there is a chance you could successfully sell to the rabbi and unsuccessfully sell to the purchaser. So that's the worst of all worlds, at least from the rabbi's perspective, the worst of all worlds, because chametz is still chametz shavuot Pesach, and just the rabbi got all the averus. You mentioned it's kind of a Christian idea that he'll take all the averus of his balabatim, but it doesn't really help anything here. So that, so what we generally assume is happening today is not that. You're not actually selling it to the rabbi. You are giving it, to giving the authority to the rabbi to act on your behalf. I used to call it power of attorney, and I had a lawyer in the shul who told me it's not exactly power of attorney, you should call it authorization of sale is more accurate. So whatever, it's something like that, power of attorney or authorization of sale. And the rabbi never takes possession personally, and he just sells it. So you're asking an interesting question. Now, Lamaisa, there could be advantages, even though it seems like it's certainly better to do it the way we do it than have the rabbi be an agent rather than the purchaser. Theoretically, there could be advantages. Some rare situations, like, for example, what should happen if the owner of the chametz passes away before the sale? right, then things get complicated. Because the property really goes automatically to his yorshim. The yorshim were in control. The yorshim never gave authority for this to be sold. So now you're going to have a complicated situation. If he had given it to the rabbi fully, then the rabbi would have it and he'd be able to sell it. So you can make up scenarios where you'd be better off having sold it to the rabbi. Those scenarios are kind of uncommon. And like we'd say, a little shchicha, they're not really the most likely scenarios, but theoretically you would have, you can make up situations where you'd be better off if you did it that way. So you could say for your situation also that had the people actually sold their chametz to the rabbi and then took off for Israel, so yeah, that would actually do it. So now you're saying, what if they didn't do that, but you want to be zochet to it? So then we combine really two issues. One, the question we talked about the other day, can you take possession of people's chametz without their knowledge? You know, here it's easier to say maybe yes, because even without the umdana that you might have that a religious person doesn't want his chametz to become worthless, or be over the Aveira, but especially since you know they actually did try, so right, it's a good umdana that they would want it. But you still get back into the question that Sternbach and others talk about what defines the time of the chametz. Is it where the owner is, or is it where the chametz is? And if you decide the rabbi can take possession then, you'd have to decide it's based on where the chametz is, and if so, you can still sell it. So it's hard to, it's not going to help you really. That you want to transfer the possession of the chametz one way or another, so either you can or you can't. If you can, you might as well sell it. If you can't, it's not going to help otherwise. While we're talking about mysterious death issues, it's also a question, you know, we pray very hard for the well-being of the non-Jewish purchaser every year. If he dies over the course of Pesach, that also could provoke tremendous questions, because then you have to figure out what exactly are the halachas of Yerusha, is it going by Dina Demachus Sedina, and if it does, then you could also have some scenarios, because theoretically there are non-Jewish people, like for example, the President of the United States, who have Jewish first-degree relatives. Right? So certainly based on the Dina Demachus Sedina, it could be that a non-Jewish individual owning chametz of many, many people could pass away during Pesach and immediately have his property pass over, no pun intended, to Jewish relatives, and you know, that would certainly be a mess. So there are certain scenarios we just pray don't happen, and that is one of them. Yes?
Just from a more astrophic perspective, mm-hmm. How are we supposed to look at, I guess, Mechiras Chametz, and like, I mean, that's the only one that I don't really know the full, like, practical ramifications of, like, Heder Iskar and stuff like that. But like, for example, hypothetically, if it was within our culture to like say like, you know, starting January, you should be aware of like you shouldn't buy 50 pounds of flour because you're gonna need to get rid of it by Pesach. Like, you can imagine that like people would be able to follow those kind of laws, right, and then you wouldn't be at mm-hmm. a point where you don't really need the rest of at all. So how are we supposed to look at like?
Yes, I want to get to that. That's part of the vort I want to get to. So hold off on that. But any other questions before I mention one or two other halachic points that will lead up to this? Okay, so two halachic issues that will contribute to the ultimate point I want to say. So one question that comes up every year at least once and is discussed extensively in the halachic literature, and there are various opinions about that I have a strong position about, is what happens if, you know, you think that you have cleaned out all of your chametz and you've put aside all the chametz you're selling, and then all of a sudden you open a cabinet and over the course of Pesach and you find some schnapps there. You find some chametz that you hadn't set aside, and there it is, it's the middle of Pesach. What should you do? So what do you think you should do under those circumstances?
Do it?
Okay, so if you burn it, you probably burn your house down. If you burn the schnapps, but you could pour it down the pour it down the toilet, perhaps, or something like that. So that's one approach to get rid of it. What else? Does everyone agree? You get rid of it.
Leave it there, and then. Let's say it's even not. Let's say you should. There's some. I don't know. From the fact that you say it's bottle and you don't own it, then doff it by burning it or doing something to it, which sort of implies
unbottled. Unbottled.
As in, like, you owned it from.
Okay, I'm going to tweak that a little bit. But yeah, Jonah?
You might just leave it there because maybe you already overly assert, so there's nothing else we Kinshasa is there, let's say, it's right when the Israelis occurs.
Well, that, I don't know if that has so much, no offense, but I mean, because Gemara said if you find chametz on Pesach, normally you should destroy it, you know, that there is a tashbisu going on here. So a number of posts can agree with Judah, and the Mechilas Kvodom, I have a hard time with that, because the chametz that you have is sold. That's the thing. So when you write in your shtaros, that when the shtar asks you to fill out where the chametz is, it doesn't mean that I'm only selling the chametz that are in these locations. You're selling all the chametz that you have. The reason you identify locations is because, like the keys, that we want them to have access to the chametz. So therefore, we tell them where the chametz is. But it doesn't mean to say that anything that's not listed in these specific cabinets is not included. So that chametz, as far as I understand it, is really sold. And that being the case, you have a chashash gezel in destroying it. It's not yours to destroy. So I am nota, again, there are great poskim who took a different position on this issue, but I'm nota to think that you should not destroy it. And it's very crucial to how I understand this whole concept, as we will discuss in a minute. So keep that in mind for a second. I mentioned another interesting Mishaila that is discussed, so it's in the Tshuva Simchas David, who raises the issue that we put also on our shtaros that we're selling all the chametz, including this and that and everything else, and all medications and liquor that has chametz in it. So someone raised the question that that's against the Dina de Malchusa, because you can't sell medicines at all. Now, you're not a pharmacist. And you can't sell liquor without a license. So shouldn't that be a problem? The sale is against the Din al-Malchus. You hear the issue? So that, the one who discusses discussing the truth is Minchas David. So he has an answer. I think the question is better than the answer, because it is a strong question. He says that this, even though it's against the Din of the Malchusa, they're not really makbid on this because they understand that it's just for religious purposes, so they're not going to actually care, so it's not against the Din of the Malchusa. So I'm a little uncomfortable with that answer, for reasons I'll also clarify. And yeah, it's interesting also to consider whether that's true. So you could make the case it could be machalik between the liquors and the medicines. When it comes to liquor, so you're not allowed to sell liquor without a license. That's basically because they don't want you setting up a bar or a liquor store without registering it with the government. But let's say, for example, somebody bought an expensive bottle of liquor and halfway through they decide they don't want it and their neighbor says, oh, I'll be happy to take it and I'll pay you for the rest. I assume the government probably wouldn't have a kapeda on that. So, you know, the type of one-time sale that doesn't actually make you into a dealer, it's probably true that the government's not really makbid on that. But I'm saying it not because it's a religious fiction, so to speak, because I think that's a dangerous path to go down, but because the nature of that sale is probably not one that makes you into a liquor store or a bar and that the government would have an objection to. When it comes to medications, I'm not so sure that's true, because then there's a safety issue, and I think somebody who went halfway through a prescription bottle and then said to his neighbor, who's also sick, that you can just buy it off me, I think that it has potential implications that probably the government would be very makbid on. Now, it happens to be that it's a big kasha whether you really have to sell medications or have chametz in them anyway. So maybe the answer could be that when it comes to medications, we don't really care if the sale is not effective. And when it comes to liquor, so then maybe taka the government's not makbid. Maybe yes, maybe no. But to say that it's just a religious thing, and therefore the government's not going to care, I think that's a little bit of a tricky approach to take. And it's interesting, there's a parallel to this in the Hetu Mechira issue. Because one of the objections that comes up as part of the phenomenally extensive Hetu Mechira controversy So one of the objections that comes up is that the sale is not a real sale, because the law in Israel is that if you sell land, so it has to be registered in the tabu not being a board game here, but being the registry of the land sale that goes back to the Turkish rule of the land of Israel. So if it's not registered in the tabu, so it's not a valid sale. So there were those who objected that how could you say that the sale for Shemitah is real? It's not registered in the tabu. So a couple of years ago, I think sometime in the 1970s, the Knesset in Israel passed a law, Chok HaShemitah, I think it's called, something like that, where they recognize sales for Shemitah purposes even if it's not in the tabu. So that helps a little bit and doesn't help in other ways, because the fact that it wasn't registered, the objection that it's not in the tabu, has two levels to it. One is it's against the Min of the Malchusa, so maybe the sale shouldn't be considered be genuine. And two, also it goes to seriousness, that if you know that if you were really selling your house, it would be registered in the tabu, and now this isn't, this shows the whole thing is just a joke. So making this law solves one problem but not the other. It solves the Din of the Malchusa problem, but it doesn't help the seriousness. If anything, it kind of entrenches the idea that it's not real, and that's why the government doesn't care. So too, I'm not comfortable taking an attitude when it comes to chametz that, oh, well, government doesn't care because this whole thing is just a religious shtick, and it doesn't matter. I don't think that's the attitude that we want to take. So with all those last two points, let's go to address Akiva's issue. What is the hashkafa of mechiras chametz? So I think the issue is as follows. That why is it that Klal Yisrael has adopted this hanhaga of mechiras chametz, and even to the extent those who sell daraisas as well, if we don't rely on that view that Bittul makes it a drabanan. So why is it that we have not only embraced mechiras chametz, but in some cases even to the level of daraisas also? I think you can make a case as follows. So, yes, there's an Isser Daraisa here of Bayura Bayimatzeh. What is the reason for that Isser? So there's a Ran in the beginning of Pesachim. The Ran says that perhaps when we talk about the Isser of owning Chametz on Pesach, which is an Isser Daraisa, but maybe it's an Isser Daraisa that has a reason to it. And you recall we've made many references, I think, to Rav Yosef Engel, and his essay where he lists Siag Daraisas. So this is on his list, one of the items on his list, where you have a Din Min HaTorah that's really there to protect another Din Min HaTorah. So one example he has is Ba'iro Ba'imatzeh, because the Ran writes in the beginning of Pesachim that maybe the reason is, I should find this actually an interesting raya from Chumash, if I can find it quickly, but... But the Ran writes that the issue is that really the Torah doesn't care about you only chametz on Pesach in and of itself. The issue is we're not supposed to eat chametz on Pesach. So if we're not supposed to eat chametz on Pesach, so we're concerned that you shouldn't have it in your house, so you shouldn't come to eat it. So you might ask, well, if that's the case, so why don't we say that you can't own pork or other prohibited foods? So pork is different because pork, first of all, is a less chamer isser. The isser only applies. The isser is only a isser lav, and chametz is an isser kares. And also, perhaps more relevant, that pork is usser all year round. So if you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and you're hungry, and you happen to have pork in your kitchen, you're not so likely to sleepily make yourself a pork sandwich because you've never had a pork sandwich in your life, so it's not so likely it's going to happen then. But if you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and you have white bread and peanut butter in your kitchen, so you may indeed make yourself a peanut butter sandwich on bread because you could forget when you woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning that it's Pesach. So therefore, we don't have to say that it's usher to have pork in your house, but chametz on Pesach is a different story. So here's the raya I was mentioning, that the Chassam Sofer writes that there's a raya for this ram, There's a pasuk. This is pas perikid beis pasuk tezvav in Shmos in Parshas Bo. Pasuk says shivas yomim matzlos tochelu ach biyom harishon tashbisu sorim batechem ki kol ochel chametz v'nichrusa hanefesh ahim yisrael biyom harishon ad yom hashvi. So some sofer said this is a raya that here this pasuk includes within tashbisu sorim batechem. You have to get rid of all the chametz from your house. So why do you have to get rid of chametz when other machalos asurus you don't have to get rid of? You're allowed to have other machalos asurus in your house. So why chametz? Because look at the rest of the pasuk. Ki ka'ochel chametz v'nechrusa. Because there is a chi of kareis, so it's a more chamer iser. And yom harishon and yom hashvi, that this only these 7 days is it prohibited. The whole rest of the year it's mutter. So therefore you have a greater risk of accidentally eating the chametz. So that was the Chassam Sofer's support from this pasuk, that the reason for tashbisu is connected to those two factors. So in any event, so that's how the Ran says, that we're worried that you're going to come to eat the chametz on Pesach, so therefore we have to get rid of it. So, if that's the idea, that we're worried that you're going to come to eat the chametz on Pesach, so perhaps Klal Yisrael has come to the decision that selling the chametz is also effective. Why? Because what does selling the chametz do? It creates an iser gezel. And maybe that's the point, that we're saying that we're so makbid on the mamonos that two things will keep us away from eating chametz on Pesach. One is simply not having access to any. And two will be if there's an iser gezel involved, if taking the chametz is going to be an act of gezela, so then we have enough confidence in the monetary honesty of the Jewish people that that will also keep us away from eating chametz. So if you think of it that way, that addresses a lot of the kashas, right? That, so what about the fact that after Pesach, we know we've been doing this so many years, and we know that inevitably the chametz comes back to us after Pesach? And what about the fact that the chametz is located on our property throughout the course of Pesach? And we know also throughout all these years, the purchaser has never shown up at our house and asked for any of it during the course of Pesach, so doesn't all that make it into a joke? So I think the answer is no, not at all. It means still that there's technically an iser lo sigzol. And if there's an iser lo sigzol, so that will keep us away. It has no relevance what's going to happen after Pesach. It has no relevance whether or not the purchaser actually takes it from your house. The fact is that there's an iser gezela involved. And so if there's an iser gezela, that will also keep us away from taking the chametz. So if that's the point, a couple of issues that emanate from that, that if that's the point, so first of all, that's why I'm not comfortable with the two issues we discussed just right before this, that first of all, taking any attitude that, well, I can destroy the chametz that I found on Pesach, so sometimes the thinking is, well, maybe it's sold, but who knows, maybe it's not so makbid if I destroy it, etc., etc. I think we have to be very careful of any attitude that says that, oh, he's not going to care so much, yeah, it's technically his, but I can still do this, he doesn't mind. I think the whole point is to have a mindset that he does care and that we have to treat it like it's real gezela and that we're not able to make liberties for ourselves in what we're allowed to do. Now, so for example, to illustrate this, the Mechiras Chametz that we have in Riverdale, Erev Pesach, so I often see that if there's a belief that there's going to be, let's say, a need for some reason for some Chametz over Pesach, or let's say it's Erev Pesach, Shechalios B'Shabbos, a rare occurrence, where there's a need to set aside some rolls for an early morning Shabbos Suda. So you don't just assume, well, he's probably okay with this because it's only a small amount. But you say, when you make the sale, listen, I'm setting aside this or I may need this, do I have your rishus to take it? Because otherwise, I think we have to assume that there is no implied mechila here. And if you're going to be too kal about the whole thing, you're going to be too ready to assume mechila, then the whole thing kind of falls away. So the question of finding the schnapps, you should not take the attitude. You should err on the side. Again, they were great poskim thought you should destroy it and mechilas kavodim. But Rashi Pesach Frank and others emphasize that no, it's gezel and you should not. And I think it's more important to emphasize that side of the equation. And so too the Din de Malchusa question, you know, the idea that, well, you know, it's just a religious shtick and the government doesn't really care. think we have to take it more seriously than that and say that, no, it's not just a religious thing, but this is a full sale in every sense of the word, and therefore we have to figure out how to address the Din Malchus issues. But just to say that they don't care because it's religious, that is also a dangerous kind of thinking. That's why when I said of the liquor, that maybe they don't care because it's just a one-time sale of existing purchased stuff between friends, so that might be true. And that's not going to undermine the whole concept of Mechir Eschamis. But to say that, well, it's just a religious thing, so they don't really care, I think that's a more dangerous kind of thing. I mentioned this once to somebody who said, should we say that, therefore, that people who cheat on their taxes shouldn't be able to sell their chametz? There's a case to be made. You know, maybe if you're not so makbid on gezel, so then the whole power of this mechiras chametz is not going to really have its impact. The whole premise here is that you are makbid on gezel and that you're going to take it very seriously. Shula, you had a question?
Yeah. Is there any clear indication that this was the thinking and the purpose behind this from the beginning?
I hope so.
It's very nice.
I think so. I mean, I think it runs through. If you look, you know, it's again some issues you find different attitudes depending on what side you take on different things. But I think that it makes sense, and therefore also in terms it goes more to Akiva's question in terms of the hashkafa, and also the question of whether you group it with other things like hetamachira and even heteriska, which again I'm not trying to disparage those things. These things also have the great people behind them. But just in terms of whether this is comparable or not, it's like we said the first day, but now this to just help flesh this out a little bit more, that the question of harama here should be viewed through that lens, that when it comes to other concepts, so het mechira, you're doing the opposite of what the Torah says, again, not to disparage, just saying literally that that's what's happening, and that really brings up the question of harama. Ribbis is actually interesting because if we had time to talk about ribbis at length, it would explain to you why, even though ribbis it seems more like you are doing the opposite, but there's a case to be made that in the case of ribbis it actually is consistent very much with the intent of the Torah, but that's a whole discussion of itself. But here, it's not a question of doing the opposite. It's a question of doing what the Torah says. It's just a question of whether it's enough or not. So the Torah says, don't own chametz on Pesach. So we could assume that means obliterate it and never see it again. But maybe it also means that don't own it just during the course of Pesach. Now, is that enough? So clearly there were great gedolim who did not feel like it was enough and felt it was objectionable. But it's at least a different discussion that maybe it is enough. Maybe if the whole intent is that you shouldn't have access to chametz over Pesach, so maybe there's no contradiction at all to the spirit of the Torah to say that as long as it's in someone else's possession, and therefore I'm stopped from taking it, I have fully accomplished what the Torah is asking. Now, it's clearly an assessment to be had, but it's a very different question than other instances where you're doing the opposite of, or seemingly doing the opposite of what the Torah has in mind. So I think that's an important hashgafic question in terms of how to relate to it.
I mean, first of all, like, I guess that explanation assumes that like we're sort of giving reasons for the mitzvahs and like what the reason for the mitzvah is to begin with, right?
Okay, so that
like as in, do we find other examples of like mitzvahs that are sort of gedarim in and of itself? Like this, according to that explanation, it seems like Ba'yir Ba'al Yimetzah is meant just so that we aren't over something else, which is also a derisa. But like,
so that's a fair question. It's a very fair question. So just to address that for a second, even though that's a much longer issue, so a two-pronged answer. So one is, I would have thought no. I would have thought that it's not appropriate to make nafkaminas based on reasons. And it seems like it's a whole sugya in the Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and elsewhere has a discussion, do we say darshan taima dekra or not? Right? Do we say that we have not only the mandate in general to try to figure out what the mitzvahs are about, that's the whole discussion in general, the whole notion of taima ha-mitzvahs. That Talmud HaMitzvos, we see, seems to be an important part of Talmud Torah. And the Sefer HaChinuch, so for example, Sefer HaChinuch, and every mitzvah gives you a theory of what the mitzvah is about, and the Rambam and Maror Nevuchim spent a lot of time on Talmud HaMitzvos and others. So there is a strong tradition in our history of Talmud HaMitzvos study and speculation. But maybe that's just as a part of Talmud Torah, so we should understand things as deeply as we can, but it doesn't necessarily give us license to make nafkaminas based on that. So it's a complex question, though, because the Gemara has this discussion, you say, Darshin and Taim Medikra, and we seem to paskin that, no, that you should not be Darish Taim Medikra, meaning for the purpose of, let's say, being Mego, based on the nafkamina, that we shouldn't allow that. So I would have thought that this whole question, in general, of mitzvos that are assessed to be a siag should not really carry many nafkaminas for the most part. Because, okay, maybe conceptually it's nice to know that it's really there as a safeguard, but it shouldn't affect what we do. However, there is a whole weight of literature against this, because part of this discussion, if you get into the topic of siagos, of a siag min haTorah, you do find many, many, many achronim bringing in nafkaminas. So it's maybe not so much of a tangent because it's Pesach related. So I'll give Pesach related examples just to make this point, and we'll be justified under our Shloshim Yom mandate. But, so for example, there is a discussion, there's a concept of Chatzi Shir. We're talking about Chatzi Shir here. There's a prohibition of Chatzi Shir that sometimes we have a shir associated with a prohibited food, for example. And there is a concept of that in order to be punished for something, so you have to eat that full shir. So to be chayiv malchus for eating chazer, you have to have a kezayis of chazer. If you have less than a kezayis, you're not chayiv malchus. So the Gemara asks, well, what if I do have a tiny little bit of chazer? So I'm not chayiv malchus. Does that mean that it's mutter? So Gemara says, no, it's not mutter. It's aser. That's what's called chatzi shir. Chatzi shir means anything less than the full shir. So the question is that inherent or is that a siag? According to one opinion, the Gemara is nisar d'rabbanan to begin with. So if it's nisar d'rabbanan, then it probably is a siag. But we don't paskin that way. We paskin it's an isser min haTorah. So if it's an isser min haTorah, could you still say it's a siag min haTorah? So there are a number of great gaonim who felt that you could say that and that that has nafkaminas, which is surprising. So to give you an example, the Rambam brings a extra pasuk to tell you that on Pesach, you're chayiv kares for having a kezayis of chametz, but if you have a little crumb of chametz, you're not chayiv kares, but it's still aser. So he brings a special pasuk for it, chametz lo ye yochel. So all the nosei kelim go crazy about this. They say, why is he bringing a special pasuk? We have a concept in general, chatzi shir asur min haTorah. We know that by chazer, by truma, by everything else, it's asur even in a small amount. So why does the Rambam need a special pasuk for chametz on Pesach to say that even a crumb is asur? So there are many, many, many answers to this. There are, if you want to spend all day looking at the list in the back of the Shabbos Frankel Rambam, on this Rambam, you could looking up every source and every answer, it will take you from now till Pesach. He has quite a lot to say. So one of the many, many answers to this question is that chatzi shir is a siag. That the concern is you're going to come to finish the whole shir. So therefore, when it comes to chazer, we have to always worry that you'll finish the whole kezayis. But when it comes to chametz, let's say it's the last minute of Pesach. There isn't time to have a whole kezayis of chametz. So maybe in that last minute, it would have been mutter to start eating chametz at a little bit. So the pasuk is coming to address that. Now, in case you think that that's as far from the farfetched derav, which it sounds like a little bit, right? It sounds like a pretty unlikely scenario. That svara was said by four of the greatest achronim in history. And probably if you were to come up with your top 10 list, these would definitely make it. That svara you can find in the Shagas Aryeh, in the Bikiva Eger, and the Oda Behuda, and the Chassam Sofer. Probably four of the greatest achronim in history. So here you have real all-star team, all assuming that there is an afkamina to this question. So it's a kasha on the whole thing, why that's true, but there's a whole weight of literature that is willing to say, and there's much, much more than that. This is just the tip of the iceberg, of svarim that assume nafkamina is based on this idea that it's a siag min haTorah. So I think we mentioned in Chumashir, was it a few weeks ago, we talked about basu b'chalav. We talked about a shaila, if you could do a test on basu b'chalav, that is going to amount to bishul, but you're doing it for the purpose of staying away from it if it turns out to be chas v'chalav. So should we say that you're allowed to do the test? And we mentioned there that Rav Moshe Soloveitchik allowed it, and Shub ben Arav allowed it, the Dov Meisharim. So out of all this discussion, the only time I ever saw anyone raise an objection was the Dov Meisharim's brother. The Shub ben Arav's brother also has Shuvas Chazal Nachum, or Rav Nachum Liebenfeld, and he talks about this Basu B'chalav issue, the idea that Bishul is the Siag, and he talks about whether it would have enough kamina for one case, and then he gives a whole speech about who cares if it's siag, it's not a siag, it's an issur d'oraisa, an indoor from time to dekra, and we're not going to make enough kaminas on that. So that's what I would have thought would have been the attitude throughout, but the vast, vast weight of rabbinic literature that considers these points has been willing to make enough kaminas based on this understanding. So it's a kasha, but it's still nonetheless there. Now, that's all true here. But when it comes to the issue of Bali Ra, Bali Matze, I'm less sure that it's a problem. Because here, again, we don't know that the Torah, when it says Tashbisu, when it says Bali Ra, Bali Matze, we don't know that it addresses at all the question of ownership after Pesach. The fact that you know with such confidence you're going to get it back after Pesach, we don't know from the Torah that that's a problem. Like, if we have an Isser in the Torah and we're deciding, well, it only applies on Mondays and not on Tuesdays because of the reason, so then that would be a big darshin in time of the Torah. But if the Torah doesn't really spell out, then we're left to figure out whether or not this would be consistent with it. So then we really should be entitled to say, okay, well, how do we understand what the Torah is getting at, and therefore, what are the parameters? I think that's part of what's important to see here, that it's not really clear from the context that there is any spirit of the law problem to having a situation set up where you know the chametz is going to come back to you after Pesach. And that's why even the Matan Nas L'Hachzir was not clear to Achronim why that was an issue. So all of that, I think, is relevant to this question of the siag. Now, it's interesting, you could have other possible nafka minas that might be then a little less solid. So, for example, a question is dealt with, let's say, ownership in stocks that have, if you have stock ownership in companies that are producing chametz on Pesach, that essentially own chametz on Pesach. So that's a big discussion to be had. Is that a problem in terms of Bali Ra, Bali Matze, owning the stocks that tie into chametz ownership? So can you invoke a kula, which some will do and some do, that lemaisa stock ownership does not connect to your being able to touch a single crumb of chametz? Right? If you go to the supermarket and you put a box of crackers in your cart and just walk out without paying, and then they try to stop you and say, no, it's okay, I own stock in Nabisco, I'm able to take this, right? They're still going to arrest you. The fact that you own stock, for the most part, does not give you access to one crumb of chametz from that company. So can you use that svara there? Can you say, okay, well, Bayi Ra, Bayi Matze is about owning chametz that I might come to eat, and when the ownership has no connection to my eating it, should I be able to say that should be mutter? So that's going to be a discussion. There it's a little more complex, because then you have to say, all right, but here I am owning it, but it's okay because it's not dangerous. What we're saying here is better. We're saying, no, you don't own it. The question is, should it bother us that it's only a very technical lack of ownership and that you're going to come back to it later? So that's where there's a healthy debate to be had. I think it's important to frame it in the right way. Now, to add one more word to this, that there is, to add to the significance of the Minhag Yisrael, that there is, I believe, a smag who writes that the Geula cannot come. Pesach is the Chag HaGeula. We talk about both past and future redemptions. So you say the Geula cannot come until the Jews are perceived as honest people. If the Jews are perceived as dishonest, so then there cannot be a Geula, because there'll be a Chil Hashem. The nations of the world will say, how could God redeem these people? They're not the honest people. We don't see them as deserving. So in order for there to be a Geula, it has to be clear to the world that the Jews are honest. So therefore, perhaps the minhag has developed, and when it's carried out properly, by the way, I think it really does have this overall theme to it, that perhaps for this reason, this is definitely not more than speculation, so Shua, this is not something you see spelled out, but to be very broad in what we'll associate with the halachic intuition of Klal Yisrael, but it's certainly the Metzius, is that you enter into a transaction with Umos HaOlam, and you are very careful at Chut HaSayra to the integrity of that interaction, and to both in appearance and in actuality, be very, very careful about the momentous, so that will go to establish the honesty of the Jewish people in the eyes of the world, and that should perhaps have a positive effect that should bring us closer to the Gula. So perhaps that's also part of the theme, that this is a time where we take the opportunity to essentially stake our kares on the integrity of our monetary honesty, and to do so in a public way. And if you look at the process of the sale, especially the ones that I've witnessed and partook in, you see that it's just taken very, very seriously, with a strong attention to just when you'll be able to touch it, when you can't touch it, and what exactly are the monetary parameters. And the more that that is emphasized, the more that it helps the chametz, and it helps for everything else. It helps for the honesty of everything. So that should be our attitude if you're going to involve yourself in the Mechiras Chametz, that this is something to take very seriously, and you don't allow yourself to be makil towards, and to be honest about the Lishis Bominus in general. Last year, I think, in Shir, we spoke about a topic which is a huge topic, and just say one word about it, but my own personal attitude is about stealing the Afikomen Pesach night, that I recommend the soda that I have in my household, that we don't have the children told that they're supposed to steal the Afikomen, but rather that the father hides the Afikomen and the kids have a game to find it. But the idea they should steal it and hold it for ransom happens to be there were many great Gedolim who were opposed to this, and a part of it is that it trains the children in stealing. It trains the children in that there's something fun about stealing something and ransoming it off, and it's just not the message that we want to transmit on the night that is perhaps more devoted to Chinuch than any other night of the year, and devoted to Geula. It's not the theme that we want to be teaching, and therefore I think it's appropriate to avoid that by having a different way of doing things, or at least, like Rav Shlomo Zalman pointed out, Rav Shlomo Zalman was also opposed to stealing the Afikomen, but he wrote that if you're going to do it that way, at a minimum, don't call it stealing. Don't tell the children that their job to call it grabbing the Afikomen, however, don't use the word stealing so that they shouldn't have the mindset that that's what you're doing, you're teaching them to steal. This is really the opposite of the message that we're trying to convey that night, and that's an important theme, which does synergize back to the Mishnah in Kedushin, right? Because what was the topic in the Mishnah in Kedushin? Sorry? No, that, or really from the Gemara, right? That the message was, right, the Gemara right after the Mishnah, so this will bring us right back to our text, right, super synergy, right? So, Kol She'ena Malamed Espino Umdus, Malamdo, Listus! Listus lakadaitach elak ilam alam de listus. That if you don't teach your son a parnasa, so then you are teaching him to steal. Really? No, but you're ke'ilu teaching him to steal, you're de facto teaching him to steal, and obviously we would never do that, so therefore also when it comes to the Afikomen, we have to be careful that our message should not be that it's cool to steal, and adarav, the whole theme that we're doing with Mechiras Chametz is how not cool it is. Kiva, did you have a question before?
No.
Okay, yes, Jacob.
Just follow up on Isa, if you find something in the cabinet, are you supposed to move it to the place you said, or just keep it there?
So again, so this is a big machlokas what to do about it again, because there were those. So according to what we're saying, that you should not destroy it.
Right.
So yes, you should definitely make sure it's not in your way. And you should, it's more appropriate.
The cabinet that you said it wasn't in.
Right, you could lock up that cabinet and not interact with it, but you certainly don't want to take the risk of consuming it for every reason. If you consume it on Pesach, then you're bad from every possible angle. You're over both Gezel and Chametz. So you certainly want to make sure that you're not going to be tripping over it for the rest of the Pesach.
So if it's in the cabinet, so, are you moving it or are you blocking
so
it?
So yeah, if you can move it to where the Chametz is, it's probably best. But yeah, that's not 100% necessary, because again, it's more of the listing of the places. It's more of a maramako, and it's not going to create, it's not going to make it become sold magically because you moved it from that cabinet to the basement. Because it either is sold or isn't sold. So that's not going to change. The question is just that the advantage of moving it is A, because should he show up, he should at least find everything in one place, I guess. But even though it's not 100% necessary. And also because you should not be interacting with it anymore, so you should certainly keep it out of your sight and put it somewhere where you're not going to stumble over it again over the course of Pesach. Jedediah.
Going back to Keith's question, are there any Achronim that respond to the concern of indoor Shintami Mikra?
So that's really the surprising thing. The only thing I saw was that Chazon Nachum in Basu B'Chalov who raises the question.
No,
this is, he's a 20th century Afro, and all these were written before for the most part. But so I didn't see anyone ask the question and responding to it. I think also in the Tshuva Slave of Rum, yeah, we talked about Shalach Manas here before Purim, right, that came up. So there also is a little bit of discussion in the sense, even though Shalach Manas is from Nach, it's not from the Torah, but we discussed that it's still from Psukim, Psukim in Suvim, in Megillas Esther. So the whole machlokas about what is Shalach Manas about, did see one discussion about how were we comfortable with Darshin and Taimi Dekra by Megillas Esther in terms of that. So that, those are the two discussions I'm aware of which even raise the issue at all in terms of this. It's an interesting discussion in general. Just if you want to focus on this question for a second, the whole question of where you cross the line between Darshin and Taimi Dekra, and what's the Siag, and what is... Because we can mix these things together in ways that may not be accurate. And so a Siag means something is really just prohibited because it leads to something else. A reason is not the same thing as a Siag, having a reason for it. And being Dorish Taimi Dekra, or applying the reason, could be two different things if we're talking about the fact that it's a siag, or the fact that there's some kind of message here that maybe you could decide doesn't apply. So just to give an example that ties into this also, so we're saying about stealing the Afikoman and the fact that there were great Gedolim who objected to that practice. So it's not just a hashgafic point, but it's also a literal din, which I think is relevant here, I think applies, that the Gemara says in Bavin Siya that you're not allowed to steal, even almanas lemekat, meaning that even if you're going to give it back, you're not allowed to steal. So it's a question what that means. Why is it that you're not allowed to steal even if you're not going to keep the item? So some understand that it's still an anguish to the person, that even if they're getting their property back, but they're going to have a heart attack while they check all their pockets for their wallet, so that's still agmas nefesh, and that's still a part of the aveira. But the Rambam has a different formulation, which makes it sound like it's not about that. The Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, quotes the Rambam's language, is that you're not supposed to steal even if you're not going to keep it, because you don't want to teach yourself to be a ganav, that if you're going to come up with a whole plot how to get this item, even if the next step is to give it back, but in between, you have taught yourself the art of Geneva, and that is a problem. So when I said a minute ago that there's a hashkafic issue with teaching children to steal, it's not only that, oh, it sounds bad, it's a din, and it's brought in the Rambam of the Shulchan Aruch that you're not supposed to take things, even temporarily, because of this problem that is going to train you how to steal. So there, it's also interesting, there is a minority view in this Rambam, that, oh, the Rambam says the reason must be that, so he's saying it's a din Rabbanan. And he's basically saying it's a siag for Geneva itself, so it must be Gonev Omanas Lameka, and it's a din Rabbanan. So based on what we're saying, I think there's two problems with that. One is that you can have a siag deraisa too. So calling it a siag would not make it into a din derabbanan. But also, I don't think the Rambam means it's a siag. He's saying what the nature of the iser is. And there's a difference between the two. That some things are really just there to protect another iser. So we're saying that this iser is not really fundamental at all. It's just there because it's in the way of something else. It should be in the way of something else. And other things are inherent. So, but when you say something is inherent, there's still a reason for it. We don't always understand the reason. As a chukim, we don't know what the reason is. But, as we said before, the Sefer HaChinuch has a reason for almost every mitzvah. For all 613 mitzvahs, he gives most of the time, he gives what he thinks the reason is. So is he saying that every one of the 613 mitzvahs is a siyav? No, he's saying that there's a reason why this mitzvah is supposed to evoke. That's different than saying it's just there to protect a different din. So when the Rambam says, oh, you shouldn't steal even temporarily because it trains you in the Mita of Geneva, I don't think he means it may lead to a different Avera. He's saying that that's the nature of this Avera. The nature of this Avera is that it has a bad impact on your soul, on who you are. So there also, we have to distinguish when talking about time to dekra. Are we saying that a mitzvah only exists for a different mitzvah? Are we saying that just even in terms of how we understand what this mitzvah is about, that that should affect things? Maybe we'll just I think it's probably not shy to start Kedushin today at this point, but I think I get credit for that synergy of bringing it back into the daf from Lambda Lista, so that was pretty good. That sets us up for the next time. But just one more Pesach Vort about the idea of Siag Min HaTorah. I think I alluded to this in one of the Chumash shiurs also, but there's a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, because someone asked about kidneys, about selling kidneys. Right, so somebody asked that before? Judy asked it maybe? Right, so the question is, we don't assume that everything that you can't have on Pesach kidneys is a minig, but even things that are more than a minig, we don't assume that they automatically have an issue of ownership. So there's a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos about this. At the beginning of the third paragraph of Pesachim, The Mishnah talks about certain substances which aren't real chametz; they're kind of quasi chametz. It's under the gather of kol machmetzes. So the Mishnah says elu ovrim bepesach. So Rashi says, what does that mean? It means ovrim bal yira bal yimotze, that you're not allowed to own these things. And Rabbeinu Tam disagrees and says, no, there's no iser bal yira bal yimotze. That ovrim here means the ovrim and ashulchan. You have to take them off the table. You shouldn't have them on your table during the Seder because they're not edible on Pesach. But there's no iser to own them. And then he says that it can't be this iser to own them because they're only iser else called machmetzes, and they wouldn't have been iser were it not for the pasuk. So what does that mean? Very strange phrase. Wouldn't have been iser if not for the pasuk. Nothing would be iser if not for a pasuk. The whole Torah is based on psukim that have discern. So what does that mean? It wouldn't have been asur if not for the pasuk. So what I think he means is that kol machmetzes is also understanding essentially as the siag min haTorah. That it's not really chametz itself; it's something that leads to chametz. So that's something the Torah prohibits, but not fundamentally, just because it leads to something else. So I think that's what he means when he says it wouldn't have been asur if not for the pasuk. It means that it's not inherently bad. It's only bad in that it leads to something else. So the fact that the Torah has a pasuk is telling you that it should also be avoided as kind of a safeguard. So then perhaps he's saying it doesn't make sense to aser bayira bayimatze for those things because he's understanding like the Ran, that he thinks bayira bayimatze is also a siag min haTorah. So he says to have a double siag here doesn't make sense. To say something is itself a siag and we also should put on another siag of not owning it, that's too much. And that's perhaps, so that's also another interesting insight into how the whole Siag Min HaTorah concept exists. All right, so I hope you don't mind the distraction and the diversion from a little bit of Kedushin, but God willing, so next week we'll have to get moved. Tomorrow is the Parsha Day, Vayikra, we're starting a new Sefer. I guess Sunday, probably have Q&A, unless you want to get ahead a little bit more. And then over the course of next week, we have a full week next week. One of those days, we said that we'll have a Haggadah around Rabin, probably either Wednesday or Thursday. We'll have to figure out when's the most appropriate day to do it. Okay, so with that, who wants to daven first? So, Kiva, you want to daven first? Okay, Asher, Shem Yisachar, Jalucha, Sala, Shem Ha'ad, 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 Shem Take care.